You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is The Bigger Picture and I'm Lee Tree Lin. We often hear people say things like, oh, I'm really bad with faces, or see their eyes dart around our features, trying to find a hint of recognition. So what really goes into recognizing someone's face? A new study has found that Malaysian Chinese have adapted different methods of facial recognition to adjust to living in a multicultural society. And here to tell me more today are Crystal Tan, author of the paper, and Dr. Ian Steven, one of the supervisors. So when it comes to facial recognition strategies, what role does eye movement play in it?
Well, we study eye movement specifically to face recognition. So in this context, what we're looking for is global versus local context. So for instance, looking at the center of the face in the nose area, it's supposedly a more global approach to it by looking at how the features are arranged. Whereas for the local context, it's more looking at specific features, for example, the eyes and the mouth.
Why does the distinction between global and local context matter?
We're thinking about how people process information, so how they think about information. Do they think about things holistically or separately, as in like looking at specific features or specific focal points of a certain context?
And is there a dedicated part of the brain to facial recognition?
We don't explore it in our current study, but then previous fMRI studies, which is functional magnetic resonance imaging studies, found that the fusiform face area was discovered to be responsive to faces. But then it's not really dedicated to faces per se, because further research has found that people who are expertised in, for example, cars or birds, they are equally well, when looking at these pictures, they would elicit responses at that part of the brain as well.
So it's more to do with recognizing things, not necessarily specifically faces.
Yeah, not specifically for faces, maybe because you're more familiar with a certain object and stuff.
So if we're talking about familiarity or familiarization, I guess a lot of it would stem from childhood and our development. So how does it develop from there?
Okay, so earlier studies have found that infants tend to look at faces longer as compared to other objects and stuff. So then at the age of a month old, infants tend to scan edges of the face. So for example, your hairline and chin. But at the second month, they start fixating at the eyes, and they're able to recognize familiar faces by their fifth month.
Why does it begin at the eyes? Does anybody know?
Not specifically. We don't really do research according to like brain imaging and stuff. So we're mostly looking at eye movements.
What are the main issues that determine our methods of facial recognition?
We're not sure what the main issues are, but we're trying to break it down. So now we're just focusing on different races to see if we actually focus on different aspects of the face when looking at different races.
Yeah, we think that that might kind of relate to the faces that around us when we grow up. So what we think is that different aspects of different race faces are more useful for recognizing faces of that race. So for example, if you ask someone in the UK to describe what someone else looks like, they'll say he's got blonde hair and blue eyes. That kind of thing's not much use in Asia, because everyone has black hair and brown eyes. So we think that basically as people are growing up, they're seeing the faces around them and they're developing strategies, learning which aspects of the face that they should focus on that is going to be best at recognizing those faces around them.
So when people say they're bad with faces, what does that really mean?
Probably that people can't recognize faces as well, maybe unfamiliar ones that you met someone at a party or something. So we think that maybe you're not focusing at the right aspects of the face. So for example, previous research has shown that the lower facial features of an African face is the most diagnostic features. So for example, for Caucasians, if you focus on the eye color might differentiate between individuals and stuff. So that might enhance their recognition abilities.
So does it mean that what's happening is we all learn a specific system with which to recognize faces and then we apply that accordingly? Or, you know, because in the case of, say, somebody we meet at a party, is it that we're not paying attention at all, or is it that we weren't paying attention to the right aspects?
It's possible that we're not paying attention at all, but if we were and then we weren't looking at the right aspects of the face, then we might not be able to recognize them as well.
Yeah, I mean, memory is quite kind of context dependent as well, isn't it? So if you learn something in one particular context, then if you put yourself back into that context, it becomes easier to then remember that piece of information. So when people are revising for exams, if they eat mints, for example, then if they then suck mints while they're in the exam, then they find it easier to remember the information that they were learning when they were studying. And a lot of kind of people being unable to recognize someone comes when they're out of context. So you meet someone at a party and that you might remember them quite well in that context, but then when you meet them in Tesco a week later, maybe it's a bit more difficult to recognize them then.
And while we're on the subject of, you know, parties, recognizing someone's face is obviously important socially, but does it hold any psychological value or meaning?
Well, I think that being able to socialize is important, is an important psychological value. However, what we're looking at is how we process faces. So we're just looking at an external expression of how people look at faces, but not actually how the brain processes this information.
Yeah, I mean, being completely unable to recognize people can be quite sort of traumatizing for the individual concerned. There is actually a kind of I guess you wouldn't really call it an illness, more of kind of a condition where people are actually completely unable to recognize faces and can't tell other people apart at all. And when that's the case, it can be really quite difficult for them, because even though you're not doing it on purpose, or even though you've it's just kind of the way you are, or the way you've been born, other people will find it quite rude if you don't say hello to them when you pass them in the corridor, or if you don't recognize them. So and it can cause all kinds of other trouble kind of at school and things like that. With if you can't recognize someone's face, it's a major part of the kind of the social world that's you have problems with, basically.
Right, because you need to attach, you know, memories and knowledge to a certain face to understand how to interact with them.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And would people who are socially awkward have more difficulty with facial recognition?
We haven't explored this area yet, but in the next stage of our research, we're interested in seeing how individuals with autism process faces. Because individuals with autism, they have difficulty processing social and emotional information, and they tend to avoid eye contact and do not attend to the faces, which may result in difficulties processing and taking in visual information. So using eye tracking to investigate how they process faces would be of particular interest.
Moving on specifically to, you know, issues of race, why are people better at recognizing faces from their own race in particular?
So the ability to recognize faces from your own race is a reliable phenomenon across culture and race. The own race bias is suggested to be a reflection of your own racial experience, so it may be reduced with increased exposure or familiarity with another race.
If someone were raised in a country which was predominantly inhabited by a race that is, you know, other from their own, would that then affect how they recognize faces?
So there was actually a study done with Chinese that were born and raised in the UK. So what they found was that they were equally accurate in recognizing East Asian and Western Caucasian faces, which suggests that British-born Chinese were not only good at recognizing their own face, but also equally good at recognizing faces that they're more familiar with.
Right, so it still boils down to the idea of familiarity, because it's faces you see in your family as well as in your daily life.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of find the same thing in this study, don't we? Because Malaysia is obviously a multicultural country to start with, and then the kind of the media and movies and things and TV, there's a lot of kind of Caucasian Westerners are on TV and in the movies, and kind of see them around town as well. And what we found was that Malaysian Chinese can recognize Chinese faces really well and can recognize Caucasian faces really well, but still struggle when it comes to African faces. So they don't just have this kind of catch-all increased ability to recognize all faces. It seems to be specific to the ones that they're familiar with through life and through the media as well, whereas African faces, which don't encounter quite so often, are still not very good at recognizing them.
The faces that we see most often.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What about somebody who's brought up in a mixed race background? Would this affect how they view faces?
Yeah, so that's what we found in this current study with Malaysian Chinese participants. Even though they are Chinese in race, but they're exposed to a lot of different other cultures and race and stuff. So then they were actually better at recognizing, like what Ian said, Western and Chinese faces, but not the African faces.
Was there any sort of consideration given to the majority race in our country, namely the Malays? Do Malaysian Chinese have, you know, how do they view Malay faces?
Okay, we would think that they would be able to recognize them equally well, but we didn't cover that in this aspect of the study.
I'm speaking to Crystal Tan, an author of a paper entitled You Look Familiar, How Malaysian Chinese Recognize Faces, and Dr. Ian Stephen, one of the supervisors. When we come back, we'll be talking a little bit more about the differences between how East Asians and Western Caucasians view faces on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is The Bigger Picture, and I'm Lee Chui Lin. And today we are exploring the way Malaysian Chinese view faces. To start us off again, why is there such a difference between the way East Asians and Western Caucasians see faces? I mean, in the paper, it seemed as if the patterns were kind of entirely different.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of studies have found that they not only differ in the way they perceive faces, but also how they think about things and how they perceive, like, visual scenes. So for example, when you are shown like a background with a focal object, East Asians tend to describe the background more often than Western Caucasians, which suggests a global approach to viewing these scenes. It has been suggested that these differences is influenced by the social environment or social practices such as child rearing. For example, when kids were young, American mothers would actually describe label objects more often than Japanese parents. So for example, American mothers would say, oh, it's a car, it has nice wheels, whereas for Japanese parents, they might say, oh, it's a vroom vroom, here it is, I give it to you, you give it back, kind of thing. So that might influence how they attend to different pieces of information.
Right. That's really interesting. That never occurred to me at all. And the study conducted focuses on how Malaysian Chinese view faces. Why was this particular race chosen?
Well, it's mainly to replicate the previous study, which was focused on Chinese in mainland China and Japanese who grew up in Japan. So we're interested in seeing how whether people from the same racial group actually use the same looking patterns when observing faces, or if Malaysia's multicultural environment would actually affect their way of looking at things.
And how is the study conducted?
We used an eye tracking system to track down participants' eye movement, and basically they had a few tasks to do. There's two phases to the experiment. The first phase was to learn the faces. Basically, they just had to rate the attractiveness of faces, and later they were given a distractor task, and after that they were asked to give a yes or no response to whether they have seen the faces before.
And so how many people were involved in it?
22 Malaysian Chinese.
Could you explain, you know, your findings? We've spoken a little bit about you know, the fact that Malaysian Chinese view faces in media and such, but what were your actual findings?
We found that Malaysian Chinese were actually equally well at recognizing East Asian and Western Caucasians, but not the less familiar African faces. We also found that they actually use a mixture of both Eastern and Western strategies, which is looking at the eyes and nose equally more than the mouth.
Yeah, so whereas Westerners, well, for a long time it was assumed that everyone viewed faces in the same way, and the typical strategy was that people would kind of look eye, mouth, and do kind of a triangular looking pattern. And the reason they thought this was because they only ever did the experiments in the West. And then a couple of years ago, some people looked at Chinese participants and found that they were focusing on the middle of the face, and they came up with this idea that rather than learning each feature individually, they're kind of looking at the configuration, so the distances between features. So the Malaysian Chinese then are, instead of looking eye, mouth like the Westerners, and instead of focusing on the nose in the center of the face like the mainland Chinese, they've got this kind of intermediate strategy which kind of focuses on the nose but also looks at the eyes. So they've kind of got this kind of midway between the traditional Chinese and the traditional Western way of doing things.
It never occurred to me until after I read the paper, and then after that I started thinking about, you know, how I recognize faces and how I look at faces. And it's quite true, and I'm not sure. Yeah, and it occurred to me I didn't know why this was happening to me or why I was doing it. But, you know, I suppose a lot of it lies in the whole Western media concept. And while we're on the topic of exposure to Western culture, is it then an issue of learning how Western people look at faces because we're looking at it, you know, from the point of view of a camera and therefore a director? Or is it that we've grown, you know, accustomed to just looking at the faces?
It's more of us looking accustomed to the faces because, like I mentioned before, for example, eye color and stuff are more differentiating for Western Caucasian faces. So we might tend to pay more attention to these features so that we are better able to recognize them.
And what are the different diagnostic methods of facial recognition around the world? In our conversation today, we've kind of focused a lot on Western Caucasian and East Asian. Could you give us some other examples?
To be honest, I don't really know. Because no one's done the research. I mean, the majority of psychological research goes on in Western Europe and in America, and kind of now Asia is kind of on the up. It's starting to be done here as well. People have done it with African faces, haven't they? And seen that Africans look at the nose and the mouth, which suggests that maybe the nose and the mouth are the best way of recognizing African faces. But beyond that, the work just hasn't really been done, so people don't know. And as kind of as this study and the couple that have come before it are showing, that if you just try and generalize from Westerners to the rest of the world, it doesn't necessarily always work.
Because there are different gradations of culture and society, right? And what about for people who move around from country to country very often? How will their facial recognition methods change?
I don't think that they actually change, because I think we think that we learn these kind of patterns to best recognize the faces that we most frequently encounter. So if we're changing from places to places, we might not have the opportunity to actually learn a certain pattern that's best for recognizing the different faces that we move around to.
So does that mean that people who move around a lot may, you know, kind of always encounter difficulties in recognizing faces?
Well, they might have a certain pattern that they have been accustomed to using, so that might be the one that they choose to use.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, they might also learn it. We don't know whether they learn new techniques or not. I mean, our sample was Malaysian Chinese, but as well as that, as well as the fact that they've grown up in this kind of multicultural environment, they're also now studying with us at University of Nottingham. So that's obviously like a Western university, and some of their kind of other students and quite a lot of the staff are Western. So they might have picked up some of these skills at university rather than just kind of coming with it. So, I mean, people can learn in adulthood, so maybe they are shifting a bit, but we think probably most of it happens in childhood, but we don't know.
That was the reason for the question, because you know, a lot of people kind of move around for the sake of work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you do wonder if somebody moves to a country that's you know, alien in culture and appearance, how would they be able to adapt? So would you say then that it's hard to say, it's just that people are adaptable?
Yeah, I guess people are adaptable. I mean, usually with things like this, if you haven't learned something by adulthood, then you can kind of have a go at it, and you can learn it partly, but you'll never be as good as if you learned it. I mean, it's kind of like playing the piano or something. If you come to playing the piano in adulthood, you'll never be as good as if you started at age 4, but you can still learn to play something.
And overall, what's the cultural impact of this study?
Well, it helps us understand that even though it's not merely a race thing, so for example, even though the Chinese at mainland China might adopt a certain strategy to look at faces, but Malaysian Chinese, because of our environment, because of the multicultural nature of this country, that we are able to learn something and adopt a best approach that we're able to recognize the faces that we normally encounter.
And what's coming up next? Do you plan to extend this study, you know, further in other areas of interest, or?
We're planning to do this study on individuals with autism.
As you mentioned, yes.
Yep.
What will you be planning to study? Again, facial recognition?
Besides facial recognition, we're interested in seeing how they would react to facial expressions, because they have difficulty recognizing emotions as well, so that'll be an interesting aspect to explore.
Yeah. I mean, autistic people also kind of, they tend to be very interested in details of things often, and it's thought that they would perhaps have more of a local processing style, so they might do even more of the kind of learning individual features, so perhaps be kind of more towards the Western style of processing rather than the Chinese style.
Okay, so once that study is done, maybe you can come back and tell us all about it again. I've been speaking to Crystal Tan and Dr. Ian Steven on the subject of how Malaysian Chinese recognize faces on The Bigger Picture in BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.